This is episode 89 of the 99 Forever podcast. I'm Eric Friesen, and my guest tonight is making his debut on the podcast. He's an Oilers fan from San Diego, California, Adam Blaback. Adam, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, Eric, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk Oilers with you.
For sure, man. And, you know, even though it's starting to warm up here in Western Canada, I think a lot of people listening to this podcast will still be jealous of the weather that you're having right now.
Yeah, it was close to 70 degrees today. So, yeah, it's always San Diego's always good. The weather's always
great. Yeah. I'd have to do the conversion to Celsius, but I know that 70s are usually pretty warm. Have you always lived in San Diego?
Yep, born and raised in San Diego. Yep.
Nice. I mean, I've been to California many times, but I've only visited San Diego once. I'd love to go back, though. SeaWorld was fun. We checked out the zoo. Coronado Beach was awesome. It's probably one of the nicest beaches I've ever been to in my life. So I definitely need to make it back to your city eventually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. San Diego's a great place.
And since you're a first-time guest on the podcast, you know, I just always like to start by hearing a little about your own Oilers fandom. So let's just start at the beginning. When did you first get interested in hockey, and how did you become an Oilers fan living in Southern California?
Yeah, so my uncle kind of got me into hockey. He's been a season ticket holder on and off with the San Diego Goals since the 1960s, actually. So he's always, whenever we go to his house, he'd have the Kings or Ducks games on in the background. And yeah, he got me into the sport. And yeah.
And how did you become an Oilers fan specifically, though?
Yeah, so one of the first hockey games I watched in full length was the Anaheim Ducks at Edmonton Oilers. It was December 2010. And I just remember watching it. It was so much different than football and basketball, you know, and it was just such a unique sport to me. I had never watched a full game before, so I didn't know the rules or anything like that. I remember it was a good game. The Oilers lost in a shootout that night, unfortunately, but I remember the broadcasters were talking about the Oilers. They were like, yeah, this is a young team. And they're kind of talking about the city a little bit. They showed outside of Rexall Place and the Northern Lights. They showed the Northern Lights, which I thought was so cool. It was just the complete polar opposite from San Diego. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. You know, the city was completely different. I was like, that looks like the North Pole, you know? And yeah, I just remember it was a good game. And I was like, you know what, from now on, I'm going to be an Oilers fan, which is pretty random, but it was just the difference in the cities, I think, is what caused me to become an Oilers fan.
That's interesting. And, you know, you probably couldn't have picked a team further away from you to cheer for.
Oh, I know. I remember they were talking about, like, how far north it was up. And I researched, like, on a map, like, where it was. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it's so far up there. But, yeah, I remember, funny enough, Nikolai Hobby-Bullen was in net that night. And I remember he made a big toe save in the shootout on Corey Perry. And I just remember being like, this is so cool. And I liked the jerseys at the time. They were wearing their alternate jerseys, like kind of like those almost like pajama looking.
They brought in those Reebok Edge jerseys in 2007. And originally those were the home and away set. But once they brought back the classic 1980s style Gretzky era jerseys, those Reebok jerseys kind of got pushed to the alternate status.
Yeah, I liked them at the time. I still kind of think they're unique, and I know a lot of fans would disagree, but I think they're pretty cool, and they have a good place in my heart just because it was the first game I ever watched.
Sure. And that's a tough time to come in as a fan too, right at the beginning of the decade of darkness.
Yeah, I was so clueless to the, you know, to the sport. I didn't know much about it, and at the time, I remember it's kind of funny looking back, but the broadcasters were talking about, you know, this is a young and upcoming team. They were talking about Sam Gagne, Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, and all these guys.
Magnus, like, PRV. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to become a fan now. They're going to be good in a couple of years. But, you know, little did I know it'd take a while. So.
Well, credit to you for sticking with it, especially what those first 5 years as a fan must have been like. I'm sure it was a nice shot in the arm when the Oilers got McDavid in 2015, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I remember I would, after that game, I listened to just about every single game. I would only listen to them because that's all I could do. I only get the Ducks and Kings channels here in San Diego. Right. So I would listen to the games on my computer or my mom's phone. I didn't even have a phone. I was 10 years old at the time. So I would listen to the games. And I just remember they would just lose constantly. My mom would be like, what are you listening to? I'd be like, oh, the Oilers. And she didn't really know much about it. But I would tell her and she'd always ask, like, oh, did they win? And 9 times out of 10, I would be like, nope, they lost. And I'd be all sad and stuff. But those were good times. I remember listening to Sam Gagner's 8-point night.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. And then, yeah, there were a lot of good memories. But we're so lucky to have Connor McDavid. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. We're so lucky.
That, I mean, especially if what those years were like following the 06 Cup run. No city deserved to have a player like Connor more than Edmonton. They put up with a lot of losing years until they finally were blessed. We were blessed with this generational talent in the mid-2010s. And it still took a few years for the team to get on track. But once they did, I mean, we're looking at now 5 straight very solid regular seasons, a couple decent runs in the playoffs, but still looking for that ultimate goal. But when you compare what we've seen in the McDavid era to even what your first 5 years were like as an Oilers fan, it's night and day.
Oh, yeah, complete difference. I mean, just the talent alone, going to games. I mean, I remember I would go to games back then, and they would lose just about every night, too, when I would see them live. And now, when I go, they win pretty much every time. So it's just a complete switch. And I'm so grateful I won't take these playoffs, these consistent playoff appearances lightly. I love it. It's great.
I believe it was 2 years ago that they swept California for the first time in franchise history, too. Every game they played in LA, Anaheim, and San Jose, they won all their road games. I think that was in the 2021-22 season. So if you're at any of those games, you probably would have seen wins for sure. And I mean, there also is a pro hockey team in your city, and you mentioned your uncle's connection to them, the San Diego Gulls, who are, of course, the AHL affiliate of the Anaheim Ducks. Adam, do you ever go to any Gulls games, or do you just check out the Bakersfield Condors when they come to town?
Yeah, oh yeah, I go to a lot of Gulls games. I check out their games a lot. Obviously, I'll go to the Condors games when they're in town, but I like to go to Gulls games. The San Diego Sports Arena is the arena they play in. It's about 30-minute drive from where I live, so I'll make my way down there pretty frequently just to watch some pro hockey. It's always awesome watching live hockey.
And have you been to see the Condors any times this year?
Yeah, I've seen the Condors twice this year in San Diego. They won. I was there last week, and they won, and then they lost last month. But yeah, it's cool to see. It's such a cool experience seeing guys so close, you know. It's such a small
that are Oilers prospects too. I mean, that even makes it an added plus for you, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I saw Dylan Holloway and Sam Gagner was there, and then I mean, flashback to 2015, I saw Leon Draisaitl play against the Gulls in San Diego. And so that was pretty cool. Leon Draisaitl was there.
Yeah. He didn't make the team out of camp that year, but he wasn't there very long because he was recalled, I think, after just 6 games.
Yeah, I think I saw him in November, and he was there for he dominated that game. I remember Eero Pekkarinen was in that game, Laurent Brossoit. The team was, stacked, and so was the Gulls, too. They had Gibson and Nett and Theodore on the back end, and they had a good team. But, I love going to AHL games.
And then, like you said, he played half the season with the Oilers in 2014-15 before he got sent back to junior. And then it was a little disappointing he didn't make the team out of camp the next year. And I know there were some Oilers fans concerned at the time saying, you know, here's our former third overall pick from just a year ago, and he's not making the team this year. Is he going to be a bit of a project, or should we be concerned about this? And then his first game back up to the NHL, he comes in, he has 3 points in the game winner against the Montreal Canadiens in his season debut, and basically took off from there. He finished with a 50-point season and really just hasn't looked back. The next year follows it up with a 77-point season, and look, now this year he's on the verge of having his fifth 100-point season in the NHL, which will be the third most in the salary cap era. So any of those concerns we had back in 2015 were quickly washed away.
Yeah, Leon's unbelievable, too. We're so lucky to have him and Connor. But
Leon's a
force out there. He's so dynamic, and I know he kind of gets some hate with his hustle or whatever, but I love watching him play. He's so sturdy and so strong with the puck. He's such a great player.
Can't knock him off it. He can shrug off checks like with ease, and the way he's able to distribute the puck under pressure down low, it's really impressive. And you put him out there with a guy like McDavid, those two just were unbelievable magic together in the offensive zone.
Oh yeah. It seems like we're watching highlights of these guys every week. I mean, he's just dishing out behind.
And they've been doing it for years too, right?
Yeah. No look behind the back passes. Just, boss, just it's unbelievable. These guys
undoubtedly the best duo in the league. And you know, you mentioned some of the players when you first started watching the team, like Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, Magnus Pärvi. I guess Nugent Hopkins would have come in as in your second year as a fan. I just want to know who were your favorite players when you first started following the team and why.
Yeah, so the first favorite player I had was actually Nikolai Hoppy-Bolin, believe it or not. Just simply reason being was his mask, and I was so interested with, you know, the goalie position. It was such a different thing than I was used to, you know, with football or whatever it was, with the mask and the pads.
Goalie masks are unique too.
Yeah, I thought his mask was awesome. And then, you know, I started looking more into the team, and I was a big fan of Jordan Eberle, like you said, and Nuge when he came in, and then Ryan Smith when he came back, when he returned in 2011.
Yeah,
he was my favorite player. He was my guy. I love Smitty. He's the best.
And you know, I mentioned this on a previous episode because I always ask, like I said, first time guests who their favorite players were, and I said you could talk to anyone who is, like, I'm 35, and you could talk to anyone who is 5 years older than me to someone who is like, you're in your early 20s, right?
Yeah,
so I could talk to someone who's 15 years younger than me. That's a pretty wide gap of ages that look at Ryan Smith as one of their heroes. I mean, for an entire generation, he was the poster boy for the Edmonton Oilers. And, I mean, there has been more skilled players that have come along since, like even an Alish Hemsky and a Taylor Hall and an Eberle. And then later on, it got even better with these world-class talents like McDavid or Dreisaitl. But in the 2000s, especially before that trade in 2007, which still bothers me because he should have spent his entire career as an Oiler, Smitty was the guy. And it's cool to see that you were able to follow him for those last 3 years when he came back to the team from 2011 to 2014.
Yeah, he was my favorite player by far. Once I, you know, read about him and saw what he did for the city, and I watched those 06, that 06 cup run and all that. Yeah. And then,
unbelievable.
And then I saw him play live a couple times, and just, I could see just the way he treated the fans, you know, in warmups. He'd always be tossing up pucks and stuff like that. And I could just see he's a good guy off the ice too, and just such a good player. But I remember that his final game just being so sad. My favorite player was leaving.
It was emotional, but it was a very cool send-off, and I'm glad that they were able to do that for him, because for everything that he gave to that team and that city over 20 years, for the bulk of his, you know, nearly two decades in the NHL, he is with the Oilers. Just everything that he gave, he deserved to have a curtain call like that to call it a career.
Oh yeah, that his final game was awesome. I mean, like the standing ovation and then the Canucks coming back out on the ice and all giving me a handshake, I think truly shows what type of player he was and what he meant for the city of Edmonton. And then just like how much the other team, you know, respected him.
Oh yeah. I mean, the Canucks are one of their biggest rivals, and for them to, you know, do that was a really good gesture. And one of the few times in my life that I've been impressed with the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. Credit to the Sedins for doing that. That was pretty cool.
I knew that they were the ones that were leading that charge, and good to see. It would have been great if he could have scored that one last power play goal in his final game. He was tied with Glenn Anderson for the record, and he was really trying to break it. I don't know if you remember, he had a 5-minute shift in that game, that they were just trying to get him that last power play goal so badly. Didn't end up happening, but it's also cool that he got to wear the captaincy for the final game. It was the only time in his career that he got to wear it. I really think that he should have been the captain in 2013-14 instead of Andrew Ferentz. It was a decision made by Dallas Eakins, and I mean, look, not all of Dallas Eakins' decisions were loved by the fans. I would say most weren't, but that was just one where, you know, you got Smitty, he's back in town. Sean Horkoff had just been traded that summer. If there was any guy to put the C on, you give it to Ryan Smith after everything he had done for that team. So a little bit of a question mark why Eakins didn't do that. But still, I'm glad that he got to at least wear it for that final game.
Yeah, I think that was awesome. I remember that pretty well. And yeah, I was bummed too. It was a confusing thing. I was like, Andrew Ferentz, I mean, he's a good veteran guy, and he was good on Boston and then Cal and all that, but just seemed like a questionable move for, you know, Smitty, who's, you know, likely his last season, and then obviously it was, so just a questionable move.
But still, like I said, he got to go out the way he wanted. And, you know, I actually had the chance to interview Ryan Smith about 6 years ago when I was working for a local TV station in Alberta. And one of the coolest days of my life to get to not only meet my childhood hero, but get to interview him on television at a junior hockey game that was going on in town that he was an owner of. So very, very core memory for me getting to, like I said, talk to someone who I idolized for all those years. I told him right off the start of the interview what a big fan I was, and then I got professional after that. But I thought, if I don't get this out of the way right now, I'm just going to be like staring at my hero for the next 10 minutes. So, but anyway, what do you remember about your first live Oilers game? When was it? Who was it against? Anything memorable from that night?
Yeah, so my first live Oilers game was December 31st, 2013. It was New Year's Eve, 2013, so going into 2014. But I remember it was in Phoenix. And we drove from San Diego. It's about a six-hour drive to Phoenix. Me, my dad, and brother, we drove up there. And I just remember they lost in overtime, unfortunately. I remember there was a great crowd, a lot of Oilers fans, as usual. They always travel well. But, it was my first game, so I was so excited. I remember, getting high fives from them. I was down there and seeing Smitty up close and Nuge and Eberle Hall, all those guys. It was just such a cool time.
Nice. You were right down there for warm-up and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was awesome. Got high fives and all that, and then we had pretty good seats too, so yeah, it was a great time.
And I saw on Twitter that you had the chance to attend your first Oilers game at Rogers Place this winter. Adam, was your first time in Edmonton everything you hoped it would be, and was this trip something that you'd been planning for a while?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was everything and more, honestly. The people, first of all, are unbelievable in Edmonton, and my trip was just awesome. It's like, I couldn't even put into words how good of a trip that was, honestly. I actually only planned it 3 weeks in advance. I went with my brother and my girlfriend as well. And we drove up to LA and then flew out of LA to Edmonton. And we just picked a random game. We figured like, oh, Nashville, you know, maybe it'll be a little bit cheaper. We're college kids, so, you know, don't have too much around. And little did we know, they got their 16th straight win that night. And it was just an awesome game. They won. I was just hoping they would win. And the people were so nice. They were just asking, where we were from and all that. And when we'd say San Diego, they'd be like confused and all that. And like, what do you mean you're from San Diego? Like, are you from Edmonton originally? Did you move there? They were just... Everyone was just so kind and reaching out and stuff, and it was awesome. Everything and more, honestly.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's Oilers fans everywhere. I probably follow 6 or 7 Oilers fans from the States. I actually just had one on my podcast a couple weeks ago, Brandon Krause, and he talked all about his time coming up from Illinois to Edmonton and his experience, and basically said everything that you just said about how welcoming the city was and all the people and everything that he got to experience there. So I'm glad that you had a similar experience in your time there. Just for your brother and girlfriend, first time in Canada, did they enjoy it as much as you? Like, what was the overall time like for everyone?
Yeah, so my girlfriend and brother have no ship for the Oilers whatsoever.
Right.
It was just more for me. They just wanted to come with and kind of see the city and see Canada and all that. So their expectations were basically zero. Like, they had no expectations. And they were
coming to support you.
Exactly, which I really appreciate. And yeah, they were blown away. Mainly by the people, obviously. And Edmonton can get a bad rap for whatever reason. I'm not too sure. And but, you know, living in San Diego, I feel like one of the best cities in the country, maybe the world. I feel like I can tell if a city's good or not. And Edmonton is a beautiful city. I think the people are great. The city's pretty. The North Saskatchewan River running through and all that. It's just a beautiful city. And they were, yeah, they were blown away with how nice the people were and pretty the area was and all that.
Well, first of all, your pronunciation of Saskatchewan is great for someone who's an American, too. I've heard that butchered a few times, so good for you there. And also, just, you know, I think part of the reason the reputation took such a hit is how Edmonton used to be before the downtown was revitalized. I mean, getting the whole arena district built did wonders for that city. And like you said, it does have the River Valley. You know, there's a historic hotel right in the landscape. If you look at the downtown, the Hotel McDonald, it just being so far north, I think a lot of people in the States might see it as just, it's so out of the way. There aren't as many entertainment options or amenities there compared to some of the bigger cities in the US like LA, New York, Chicago. But if you're just looking to play in a place where the fans love the team more than anything, and where you're the number one team in town, the number one story in town every day, I can't think of too many places that I'd rather play than Edmonton, because the fans live and die with the fate of the team. And you will be, if you win in that city, if the Oilers ever win a Stanley Cup, this group will be legends in that town forever.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. I mean, it's just, I got chills when you said that. I can't imagine if that were to ever happen. I really hope it happens in my lifetime. I believe it will.
I mean, they have as good of a chance now as ever. And like, you saw the Wayne Gretzky statue lifting the Stanley Cup, obviously, when you came to Rogers Place, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
They will erect a statue of Connor McDavid right next to him when the Oilers win a Stanley Cup. Gretzky wasn't even retired when that statue was built. He was mid-career. So I don't even know if they're going to wait until Connor retires. I'd bet that it goes up while he's still playing for the team.
Yeah, I've always said to my brother and all that, if they ever win, if they win soon or whenever it is, mm-hmm. I'm going to make my way down there. I'm going to be there for the parade. I'm going to do all this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've talked to some friends in Edmonton too. Like, I live about a 5-hour drive away, and I said, if the Oilers do win the Stanley Cup this summer, I will drive out there in June for the Stanley Cup parade. I'll be there in 2 weeks for a game as well. I try to come to about four trips to Edmonton a year. Like, the last trip I was on, I caught 3 games, but I will be there for the parade because I want to see that. And I'm sure the weather was a little colder than what you're used to when you came in January, but Edmonton in the summer is very nice. So you'd have a different experience in June than you did in January.
Oh yeah. Even the weather wasn't too bad. Actually, I was there. I think the lowest it got was like in the low 30s Fahrenheit. So like zero or whatever.
Yeah.
Celsius.
32, but, I think, is zero.
Yeah. So it wasn't bad at all, honestly. It was, yeah, it was nice.
Did your brother and girlfriend handle the cold as well as you?
I think they did, yeah. It's funny because I remember that day we left, we drove from San Diego to LA. And when we left LAX, it was sunny and like, it had to have been like close to 75 degrees. It was like that weekend, I remember, was like, it hit 80 in LA.
It was wave in January.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So it was definitely cold for sure for us.
Well, you know, I remember when I came to San Diego back in 2002 with my family. We, like I said, we went on a vacation, you know, did all the Anaheim Disneyland and everything. And then we also did San Diego and all the stops I mentioned earlier in the podcast. But we went actually swimming in the ocean. And that was the first time that I'd ever actually swam in the ocean before. And I remember when we came out of the water, there were some people who were walking on the beach, and they kind of jokingly said to us, "You guys must be Canadians, because no one from here would go in the water in November."
Oh yeah, yeah. I live actually. I'm lucky enough to live pretty close, like a 5-minute drive to my nearest beach here, and it's just the water is. Anytime the water gets below 60 or even like 65, I'm not trying to go in it. It's too cold.
Yeah. It was something that we couldn't pass up though. And, like I said, it definitely was warmer in San Diego than where we were coming from. So, we weren't going to miss out on doing that. And, you talked about, Edmonton, but I know you were also in Arizona recently to watch the Oilers play the Coyotes at ASU. There's even a picture of you in the background of an Oilers goal celebration, which was awesome to see. And I know you have it as your profile picture now. And from watching that game on TV last month, it sounded just as loud, if not louder, when the Oilers scored than when the Coyotes scored. First, just tell me, what was your experience like watching an NHL game in a 5,000-seat arena? And second, what percent of the crowd do you think were Oilers fans?
It was probably one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. And it just the most unique venue, I think. One of the most unique venues in all of sports, I think, to witness a pro game. It's just far better than even an American League rink. It's the weirdest thing. Like, the only way to describe it is, like, imagine watching Connor McDavid at your, like, local rec rink.
Exactly.
It's even smaller in person too. It's the weirdest thing. And there's no real seats. It's all bleachers. And to answer your question, it's tough to gauge, but I would say, I mean, I saw like 3 Arizona Coyotes jerseys, probably. And honestly,
like, I mean, whenever they showed the crowd on TV, it was all orange.
Yeah. Imagine that times like 10. It was, they're only Oilers fans. It was pretty crazy.
So in your section, were you just surrounded on either side by Oilers fans too?
Yeah, I think. Because I remember I looked at that picture and I think there was probably 2 or 3 Coyotes fans, but it was crazy. There was probably about 200 to 300 people in the section behind the net there, and 297 of them were Oilers fans. It was pretty great.
I think from the picture, you were at the end when they shot, when they attacked in the first and third period, I should say. So you saw a lot of goals there late.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Zach Hyman scored right in front of us. I think Kane got a couple. And then it was just so cool. I was like, I was thinking, because I know you're always posting Getty images, which is pretty cool, but I was thinking, I talked to my brother and he was like, yeah, we might be in the background.
You're in one. Yeah, I noticed that when I looked at it. Well, I mean, once you pointed out it was you, I thought like, that's pretty cool. Yeah, you were in the right spot for that. And I guess you'll be captured in the back of an Oilers goal celebration forever now.
Yeah, I'm going to get that one framed. I've actually been talking to a framing place here, and I'm going to get that framed
nice.
Up. Yeah, put it in my bedroom.
I mean, who knows if you'll have a chance to do it again, so why not, hey?
Exactly. Yep, absolutely.
So, okay, other than going to see the Coyotes in Arizona, and you mentioned that when back in 2013 you'd seen them play there too, you've now seen them play in Edmonton as well. How many different arenas have you seen the Oilers play in total?
Excuse me. I've seen them play in Anaheim, LA, San Jose, Seattle, Edmonton, like you said, Arizona, and let's see. Yeah, that's it. So I'm not too sure. 5 or 6.
Did you drive to San Diego too, or to San Jose too, I should say, or did you fly for that one?
Yeah, you know what? I actually flew. It was back in 2019 when the Oilers were in town. They played in Anaheim. They played in Anaheim. I think it was November 10th, I think. November 9th or 10th, around that date. And McDavid had a hat trick that night. in Anaheim. And then two nights later, they played.
I remember they played. Well, he had a hat trick against Colorado that same week.
Yeah. And then they got murdered in San Jose. They lost like 8-3 or something. And that was when San Jose was pretty good. Like, they had all their legends, you know.
Carlson had just arrived, right? Like, that was before the wheels had really fallen off for that team.
Yeah, they just dummied the Oilers. And I remember it was a loud building. It was still one of the loudest buildings I've been in when they were doing, like, that chomp. And then the Oilers would get a penalty and just like, oh, no, here we go. That goal song was so annoying by the end of it.
But you know what? After getting beaten up by the Sharks for a lot of years during that decade of darkness, I don't feel too much sympathy for them going through their rebuild now. And I'll be at the final regular season home game against the Sharks on April 15th. So I'm fully looking forward to the Oilers getting a big win that night and hopefully maybe a 5-point night for McDavid too.
Oh yeah. Any sort of revenge is good with me.
And what is your favorite memory of watching the Oilers, either on TV or live in person? If you had to think of your entire time as an Oilers fan, the one favorite memory of watching this team.
The one favorite memory of watching this team. Wow. There's a ton, honestly. But
narrow it down to maybe two or three for me then.
the one that really sticks out to me, I was watching it on TV, was when Connor McDavid scored that series winner in Calgary. That was unbelievable. I remember I was at my dad's house and he was watching it with me. He's kind of a hockey fan too now that I am, but
converted him to an Oilers fan.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was jumping and all this, and it was awesome. It was definitely one of the best experiences for sure.
I mean, since the run to the final in 2006, I think that is the one singular greatest moment that this franchise has had since then. Not only because it was an overtime goal to move on to the Western Conference final, but to do it against your biggest rival and in their building. I mean, I don't think you could have scripted a better way for that series to wrap up.
Oh, I know. And especially Leon's getting the assist too. It's just like icing on the cake. And then that celebration and in Calgary, and to go to the Western Conference Finals. Come on now. It was great.
It's one of those videos that we'll watch back for years and years to come, but we can still picture the goal exactly in our head, how it went down. You don't even need to see the video. It's sort of like etched in the minds of an entire generation of Oilers fans. And especially because the Oilers and Flames hadn't played each other in the playoffs in over 30 years. So like, I was 2 years old the last time they played. So for me and anyone younger than me, they'd never seen the Battle of Alberta in the playoffs. And now there's, like I said, an entire generation of Oilers fans who have this memory of not only beating the Flames, but beating them in such a decisive manner. Like they did get embarrassed in that first game of the series. It was a really tough 9-6 loss. I mean, they did come all the way back from a big deficit to make it 6-6, but you know, obviously still ended up with a terrible result that night. But still, for them to win the next four straight, including two of those wins in the Flames building, like I said, you couldn't have asked for a better way for that series to go.
Yeah, I hate the Flames, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think it is good for the game and for Alberta when both teams are doing good.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But it's true.
It is. I mean, we, as much as we hate the Flames, you are right. Like that series, even though there might have not have been that many Oilers fans who were cheering for the Flames to beat the Stars in the first round, still to have those teams going together, it made the hockey so entertaining with so much passion and hatred between the two teams. It added to the overall atmosphere of the series.
Oh yeah. And I remember Kachuk's brother, Brady, was in there and
cheering him on.
Family was there. It's just like, you guys got to beat these guys. I mean, come on now. It was a great series. So entertaining. And I remember just the whole hockey world was talking about the Battle of Alberta.
Yeah.
Battle Alberta, and it was just, I think it was great exposure for both cities. And even being a fan of the States, I can say this. I remember it was, those games were nationally televised And those were some of the first like major Oilers games that I can remember in my lifetime, at least. Besides, you know, 06, I wasn't a fan then. Right. That were on national television, and they were big games, and everyone was talking about it. It was just such a cool thing to see.
And I think that that series really, like, you'd think that from the time McDavid came into the league that the NHL would be trying to market him. And yes, you can argue that with him playing in a Western Canadian city, it might be a little more challenging for the league to get exposure to him to the Eastern United States. But still, you look at what they've done with Connor Bedard right from the start in Chicago. Now, he obviously does have the added benefit in playing in a major market like Chicago, but still, you'd think that the Oilers, the league would have been really trying to promote this generational talent, this once-in-a-lifetime player that the best player to come into the league since Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. And it took the league a while to catch up. They really didn't do a very good job his first few years in the league. There were years where the Oilers had zero nationally televised games in the States while McDavid was on the team. And even if the Oilers weren't a playoff team at that time, you'd still think that they'd want to show the game's biggest star. So I was kind of dumbfounded by that. But then now, you look at this season, between TNT and ESPN, the Oilers have 18 nationally televised games in the U.S. this year, which is more than any other team in the league. So they finally have caught up and got this right, at least a step in the right direction. But it did take the NHL some time to finally realize that, oh yeah, maybe we should promote this once-in-a-generation talent.
Yeah, it took them long enough. But yeah, I'm very grateful to be watching them on a consistent basis on TV. And it's just, it never gets old, honestly. As a kid, I would only watch, the only games I would be on were, like I said, the Kings and Ducks. And then NBCSN back then was like kind of like the national program for the States. And they would only play like the Blackhawks or Red Wings or whatever teams were back.
And so, I mean, now, even with the Blackhawks, with how often they played in those outdoor classic games, I mean, it seemed like every year the Blackhawks were in one. And sure, they were a Stanley Cup contender at the time. And year after year, they had good teams. And Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews were in their prime. So, yes, there's reasons why they wanted to promote them. But McDavid just played in one in Edmonton this year at the Heritage Classic at Commonwealth Stadium. It's only the second one he's played in 9 seasons. That's still one thing that I think the league needs to improve on, is that they should get him into more of those high profile outdoor games. Like, they could do one against Toronto, even if they wanted to pick an American team to do one against. There's ways that they could be still getting Connor McDavid more exposure in the U.S. or even to the East Coast more.
I fully agree. I mean, imagine having a Battle of Alberta at like in Banff or something.
Possible that would be. I think that would be cool. I'm not sure they'd do an Edmonton Calgary one again, just because they recently had one. And I mean, Calgary's football stadium is terrible. Like, that thing is so old. It was built in 1960, I believe. So Calgary will never get a chance to host another outdoor game until they build one. But both their facilities are so old. I guess that's another funny thing, just before we move on, about that overtime goal that McDavid scored at the Saddle Dome. That was the last playoff game that the Flames have played, and they're going to miss the playoffs again this year. And with their new arena potentially being 3 years away, there's a chance that will be the last playoff moment that ever happened in that building, is McDavid scoring the overtime winner.
That makes me very happy, and I smile on my face thinking about that. That's pretty cool. I didn't think about that, honestly. That's pretty cool.
That McDavid kind of closed out that building. We'll always have the bragging rights that you know, that was the goal that basically sent the Flames into a rebuild, as Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk both moved on that offseason.
Yeah, Connor McDavid single-handedly caused that. That's pretty cool.
And just lastly, you did mention, like, obviously that's your favorite Oilers moment. You talked earlier about Sam Gagner's 8-point game, which, you know, is another one that really stands out. Do you have one other one? I know you were saying you were trying to narrow it down to a couple of your favorite moments. Is there another one that comes to mind?
Oof. Probably one that I can think of. It was actually, my dad sent me a little thing on Facebook. It was 10 years ago today. It was I was actually at another Oilers game in Arizona, the Phoenix Coyotes at the time, obviously, but that game went into a shootout. And
did Sam Gagner score the winner?
Yeah, he scored that like insanely disgusting goal. I think it was.
I remember that.
But it was. I was sitting right behind the bench, which was pretty cool. The Oilers bench, and to see their reactions and Gagner just do his thing in the shootout was so cool. As you know, as a fan, and it was something that I'll never forget.
You know, now that you're talking about it, like I remember that goal. I think I almost made my friends late that night because I think we were going to see a movie. I want to say it was Captain America that night, and I didn't want to leave my place until the game was over. It almost made us late for the movie, but yeah, that's cool that he ended up getting the overtime winner, like you said. And Sam Gagner, just a shootout wizard. And funny enough, he ended up playing for the Coyotes the following season, as he was sort of traded to the Tampa Bay Lightning just briefly and then shipped over to the Coyotes after. But yeah, good that he's back in Edmonton now, and I'm hoping that we'll get to see him play in an Oilers playoff game for the first time this season.
Oh, I hope so. He deserves it, I feel like, so much.
I mean, 17 years in the league. He's only played 11 playoff games and none with the Oilers. So, like, he's down in Bakersfield right now, but I really hope he gets called up and gets into a couple games with the Oilers this spring.
Yeah, he's paid his dues and then some, and he definitely deserves at least a playoff game or two with the Oilers. It's,
I mean,
he deserves it so much.
When you think about guys who would be putting everything on the line, that guy would just be battling so hard for the Oilers just because he's been waiting for, I mean, he loves the team, loves the city, but he's been waiting basically his whole career for this moment. So to have a chance to play for the Oilers in the playoffs, I just know that he would take advantage of that situation. And man, would it be great to see Gagner lift the cup over his head.
Dear God. Yeah, that would be unbelievable. Please let that happen.
Well, I mean, like, this is episode 89, Gagner wears 89, so it just kind of ties in there, right?
Yeah, hopefully. The prophecy.
All right, man. Well, let's dive into some more Oilers talk now. And unfortunately, the Edmonton Oilers had an ugly showing last night, dropping a 5-0 decision to the Dallas Stars on the road. Adam, are you concerned about the Oilers' ability to beat the elite teams in the league, or do you just see last night's game as a one-off?
I don't necessarily see it as a one-off. And I'm also not really concerned either. They've proven that they can beat good teams. I was checking their schedule and I'm like, let me see who they've beaten. Recently, they beat LA. They beat Dallas in February. They beat Winnipeg, Boston in overtime. And then they had that really good game against Colorado that they lost in overtime. So they've proven that they can stick with the big teams in the NHL. I'm really not too worried about it. A lot of those were like extreme mental mistakes and stuff that just cannot happen. They played really bad, and I think they'll be the first to tell you that. But I'd rather have this sort of game happen than in the playoffs. Yeah, I think they played pretty bad, but I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, it was an embarrassing loss, but whether the Oilers won 5-0 or lost 5-0, one game wasn't going to define their season. And over the course of an 82-game schedule, even the best teams are going to have a few horrible losses like that. They were playing a Stars team that has a great home record and came into the game riding a 7-game winning streak. The Oilers also hit 3 posts when it was still only 1-0 for the Stars. So the Oilers could have easily been up by a couple goals in the second period instead. But just because the Oilers stunk last night doesn't mean they're no longer Stanley Cup contenders. You talked about some of the teams they've beat recently. Earlier in the season, the Oilers beat the Carolina Hurricanes 5-1, and the Hurricanes looked terrible that night. And just because they had a really disappointing loss on the road doesn't mean that they were no longer contenders. I mean, look how their season's gone since then. The Oilers also beat Vegas earlier in the year. They came back from a 1-0 deficit and scored 4 straight goals in the third period to beat the New York Rangers back in December. So they're beating some of the best teams in the league. I mean, they have the most wins and points in the NHL since November 13th. And they also have a very solid 14-11-3 record against top 10 teams in the league during that span, including a win over the Stars, as you mentioned, back in February in their building. So while I understand the frustration with how the Oilers played last night, and trust me, I'm as frustrated as anyone when they lose, I'm not going to write off a team that's eighth in the league in points percentage and about to lock up home ice advantage in the first round for the fifth straight season.
Yeah, I'm not worried really at all, honestly. Yeah, like you said, the teams that they've beaten, and recently too, one bad game does not define their season. It certainly doesn't mean that they're not a cup contending team at all by any stretch. But this will be they've got a tough stretch here coming up. I know they face Colorado tomorrow night. And then they've got Colorado again in Colorado. And just a tough I think 8 games left of the season.
Yeah, at least that last game of the season against the Avs. I mean, by then, probably what's going to be happening in the standings is locked up. So that game might not be that meaningful. Yeah. Unless the Oilers are tied with the Canucks at that point, and that game is for the division title on the line. But there's a very good chance that that game will just be playing out the string for this team. But I know what you're saying. Like, they do have some tough teams. Vegas is next week, and after that in the final week, I think those are the two toughest games that they have left.
Yeah.
I'm going to just pull up their schedule to check, because I know they have some weaker teams on coming up as well. But the big one will be, aside from the ones we just talked about, the Canucks on Hockey Night in Canada next Saturday. And, you know, speaking of what we're talking about now about the division title, like, that game will pretty much determine who's going to win it at that point, if the Oilers are even still in it. Like, right now they're 7 points back with 2 games in hand. But even if they do finish just second in the Pacific, like we said, they're going to get home ice advantage. I'm hoping that LA is going to catch Vegas. They have an even easier schedule down the stretch than the Oilers or Golden Knights have. So maybe they can still sneak in and take that spot, because I'd much rather play LA than Vegas in the first round.
I fully agree. But I think, whether it's LA or Vegas or whatever team it may be, like, they're going to have to, win.
Yeah, you got to beat the good teams eventually, right? Like, but yeah. I mean, if you could get that easier first round matchup, because then you let Vancouver and Vegas play each other in the first round, and you play whoever comes out of that series. And I really think either of those series would be a coin flip at this point. I think the Oilers and going up against the Canucks or the Golden Knights would be about a 50-50 chance. When it comes to the Canucks, though, I really like the Oilers' chances to win that series in 5 or 6 games. I think they have the Canucks number. They have an 8-5 record against them in the playoffs the past 2 years, so I'm not too worried about that. But like we said, getting out of the Pacific Division would be, once again, a big positive for this group. They've only done it once before in the McDavid era 2 years ago, as we talked about, beating the Flames to move on to the Western Conference Final. And then you're going to run into one of these teams that we talked about with either Dallas or Colorado, very likely. And I mean, it does help that the Oilers did beat the Stars, as we said, back in February, so they at least have the confidence that they can beat them. And the one that they lost in Edmonton back in November was a 4-3 game, so very close as well. But, you know, like we said, for this game, yes, it was a 5-0 game. A lot of the goals that were allowed were self-inflicted wounds, though. So if they could kind of clean up some of the mental mistakes, and if a couple of those posts turn into goals instead, we're probably looking at a closer result. And I don't think that it would be a 4-game sweep if they played the Stars. I'm not saying that the Oilers would be the favorites in that series. I think they probably still would be the underdogs, because Dallas is arguably the best team in the West. But just because they had a terrible loss last night doesn't mean that this team would just get rolled over by the Stars in the playoffs.
Certainly not. Yeah, one bad game, like we said, does not define their season whatsoever. And I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you look at that team, though. Like, the Stars are deep through their first 3 lines. They have 8 50-point guys. So when you have that kind of scoring depth, that, like, they don't have a McDavid or a Draisaitl, but what they can do is put out 3 very strong lines. And three lines that can hurt you. And whereas the Oilers, they can get contributions at times from throughout the lineup, but a lot of the heavy lifting is going to have to be done by those top two lines, you know, led by McDavid and Draisaitl. So when you have a goalie like Ottinger on the Stars side, that's a guy who's not going to give up a lot of goals, so you don't want to dig yourselves a hole like the Oilers did last night. And that's where I said that, you know, sticking to the defensive structure that's been such a strength for this team since Knobloch came in back in November behind the bench, and just avoiding some of those ill-timed pinches and, you know, making a few better reads that don't lead to 3-on-1 and 4-on-1 chances. You can't have that stuff happening if you play the Stars in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Some of those plays were just boneheaded moves last night. But, yeah, I think they'll regroup and hopefully be ready for tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow's a really good test. Colorado coming to town. So we'll see how they do. But
yeah, they played tonight in Minnesota, too. So they're coming off the it'll be the second half of back-to-backs for them. And there's travel included in that. So, you know, the Oilers need to come out hungry tomorrow night. They need to be the fresher team. They have last change. So all of these things should be factors in the Oilers' favor. And I mean, the last time they played the Avs, they had a 2-1 lead with 8 minutes left in the third period before the Avs tied it and then won it with less than a second left in overtime. So the Oilers need to come back tomorrow night and show that they can beat this team.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine. And I'm really just hoping no more self-inflicted wounds, and they'll be A-okay, I think.
And also, the line of Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Zach Hyman has been the best line in hockey this season. So there's no reason to think that that trio won't stay together in the playoffs. However, we've seen a couple different sets of wingers with Leon Draisaitl recently. Who do you think should be Draisaitl's winger for Game 1 of the playoffs, and why?
For Game 1, I'm going to go with Adam Henrique and Warren Fogle. Knobloch switched him up yesterday, I believe. I believe Corey Perry was on that second line there. And but I think Perry would fit good on the third line. But yeah, so Fogle and Adam Henrique. Usually I think Evander Kane would be in that spot, but I mean, I don't think the guy scored since February.
Yeah, it's a 20-game goalless drought for him now. So I mean, I mean he had one in St. Louis that was disallowed, and obviously Nugent Hopkins had one disallowed too, which was very frustrating, because I mean, yeah, the Kane one was probably a high stick, so I can see why that one got waved off. But it's really frustrating to see the one where Nugent Hopkins had his goal taken away when Hyman might have grazed the pad of Binnington 2 seconds before Nugent Hopkins slid the puck 5-hole when Binnington had full time to reset. So yeah, that was a tough one, but hopefully those two guys will get it going soon here.
Yeah, both of those, both those goaltender interferences were very close. Like the one on Stuart Skinner and then the one on Binnington were basically the thing.
That game, I just don't understand the officiating, especially. And I mean, I say this a lot, but I mean, like, you would think that a team with Connor McDavid would get minimum 3 power plays a game, but probably deserves 5 power plays a game. And when there's so many blatant calls, like we saw him get hauled down to the ice earlier in the game, no penalty. And then some of the ticky-tack calls that the Oilers got against the Blues, it just, like, you almost feel like you're fighting a battle against a second opponent out there sometimes. But the Oilers do have a dominant power play. And you wonder, if that goal does count by Nuge, well, now it's a 2-0 game against the Blues, and the Oilers are about to go on the power play for a wrong challenge by the Blues head coach. So that would have been a great situation to take a stranglehold of that game. Obviously, they didn't get that chance, unfortunately, but they were able to still get a point on that that game by getting it to overtime. But yeah, obviously, that was one where they probably should have had 2 points.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
go ahead.
2 games, it seems like. Kazari was back there. I don't know, that Darnell Nurse 10-minute misconduct and that.
Yeah, well, he was yelling at the ref, and I mean,
yeah,
I can see the frustration because they missed an obvious call on the Stars, I think less than 30 seconds before that call. So you can see the frustration on Nurse when they miss one at one end and call one at the other end of the ice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And then, I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with him going crazy on the refs. I know I probably would do the same thing, but sometimes you just have to kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, he lost his cool at that time, and it was tough because it put the Oilers down to five defensemen for 12 minutes. But I mean, I think that my lines are, I'm similar to you. Like, coming into the season, I envisioned a top six with McDavid, Hyman, and Kane on the first line, and Draisaitl, Nugent, Hopkins, and Brown on the second line. But obviously, those lines didn't get much of a look after Kane and Brown failed to hold their spots in the top six. Still, I think most Oilers fans knew that Hyman and Nugent Hopkins would be great with McDavid. The one line that has looked better than I ever thought, though, is Draisaitl flanked by McLeod and Fogle. And I expected those two to play most of the season on the third line, but they were actually two of Edmonton's better five-on-five players during the 16-game winning streak this season. And I wouldn't be opposed to putting those guys back together when the playoffs roll around. However, I am a bit concerned about the speed on the third line if you do that, because then the Oilers would be running out Henrique, Kane, and Perry on the third line. And while that line has a lot of size, toughness, and experience, I think that they could get exposed against teams with some faster bottom six forwards. So I would have Henrique in McLeod's spot on Draisaitl's wing to start. Henrique plays a similar game to Nugent Hopkins, and we know how well Nuge has played with Draisaitl over the years. Henrique has excellent hockey sense, soft hands. He can also play either wing or center. He's defensively responsible. And then McLeod could drop back to the third line with Kane and Perry. And as the second fastest skater on the team to only McDavid, McLeod also gives that line a player who can carry the puck up ice and defend the rush a little bit.
Oh yeah, I fully agree. I think that third line will be pretty good. Like you said, obviously not the fastest guys in Perry and Evander Kane, but Ryan McLeod will do the heavy lifting, I guess, in that sort of sense with his speed. But yeah, hopefully Kane and Perry would bring some grit, and I know they would come playoff time. But
yeah,
I really hope Evander Kane can score some goal, big time playoff.
Well, he's a big time player, and I mean, you think back to last year against the Kings when the Oilers were trailing 4-3 in that series, and he scored a clutch goal to send the game to overtime. This was in game four when the Oilers were down 2-1 in the series, and if they would have went down 3-1, it would have been pretty hard to come back. But getting that goal to send it to OT before Zach Hyman ended it, I mean, huge moment. And even the year before, he was even better in the 2022 playoffs when he was riding shotgun with Connor McDavid. Those two guys were just dynamite together on that top line. And that's why I said coming into the season, I thought we might see Kane reunited on the top line with McDavid. But like we said, he's had a bit of a tough go here as of late. The scoring just hasn't been there since the All-Star break. And because of that, he's seen himself fall down the lineup. I think that it's not impossible that he could still get his way back into the top six, but I think someone would really have to go dry for that to happen, because with the way that the lines are looking right now, you want to have someone who's a little more of a consistent producer. And Kane can score goals in bunches, but right now, like we said, with that really cold spell, it's tough to say that he would be my number one pick to be in that spot come game one.
Yeah. I think if you're, yeah, he's got to turn around. I think he will. I still fully believe in him. I mean, you look at a guy like Connor Brown, he didn't have a goal for however many games that was.
And then he scored 3 goals in 6 games.
Yeah. He's been on a little tear. So it just takes one to get going. And,
I have a feeling Brown's going to score a big goal in the playoffs this year. I'm going to make that prediction.
I wouldn't be surprised. He's been playing really good lately, I think. He's been the thing for me is I really appreciate players when they really hustle, and Connor Brown seems to do that. He's always grinding. He's always doing the little things right. And even for that long stretch of period where he wasn't scoring, he wasn't getting on the score sheet, he was doing other things right. He was on the PK, and I know fans would maybe say, well, he wasn't. Which is true. It's a result-driven business.
But he plays a similar style to Zach Hyman. He doesn't get the results like Hyman does, but you can see the similarities in how they play.
Yeah, I think so. He's always giving his best, and I think Oilers fans appreciate that. And you saw it with that standing ovation when he scored first goal.
What a boost for him, too. And I really think that that was a confidence builder. I mean, that goal was just a little deflection off his skate and in. And I mean, he even had a tap-in goal recently. But the one that was really nice was the 2-1 goal to give the Oilers the lead in Winnipeg about a week ago. And he sniped that one top shelf. And I think that getting that one was the real confidence builder for him. And just to feel that feeling, because he went almost 2 calendar years without scoring a goal after missing all of last season, basically with a broken leg. So for him to come back and now realize like, okay, yeah, I have scored 20 goals in this league before. I can do this. I think that that's going to be big for him come playoff time, because you could see just the look on his face during most of the season when things weren't going his way. He just looked so down. It didn't look like he was having fun coming to the rink. And just the expressions on his face have changed so much as of late. You can see that he's just playing with a little more just gumption too. Like there seems to be something that's come back to him, like that feeling of being an important part of the team where he's not just like taking up a roster spot, where he's out there and he's contributing. And if he can just ride that momentum into the playoffs, like I said, maybe we'll see him score a big goal down the stretch here.
Yeah, you always remember those unlikely guys scoring those really big, like David Desharnais.
I mean, that's when we're talking about big Oilers memories over the past 15 years, that would be one.
Yeah, I remember I was in my house that night, and it was really, I remember it was a very late game. And I think that was 2017.
So it was game 5 against the Sharks.
Yeah, I had school the next morning. And but I was so excited. I was jumping and all that. And those were good memories for sure.
Nice pass by Leon. I mean, Desharnais just leaps over the board, skates right into the slot, and Leon hits him with a perfect pass. And he just one times at top corner. Great shot. So a similar spot to where he made the pass to McDavid. I guess he was a little more on the half wall when he sent it over to Connor. But yeah, Leon's such a good passer, and he can find guys anywhere.
Oh yeah, best passer in the game, I think, for sure.
And McDavid is also having one of the best runs of his entire career over the past 2 months. The Oilers captain has more assists since the All-Star break than anyone else in the league has points. Adam, even after watching McDavid for 9 years with the Oilers, are you still amazed with what he's able to do on a night-to-night basis?
Oh, absolutely. Connor McDavid amazes me just about, probably, I guarantee, yeah, every single game, Connor McDavid amazes me. He touches the puck, it's like, oh my gosh, he's doing this, he's doing that. But then when you look at his stats, it's just unbelievable. I think he's 24 points away, I believe, from
1,000.
That's just unbelievable. And we're 8 games. There's 8 more games left this season. So he'd have to have 3-point night, you know, from here on out, which is crazy. But I mean, he could do it. Honestly, if anyone can do it, that's Connor McDavid can do it. And when you look at his stats last year, he had like over 60 goals. And then he's going to hit 100 assists. He does something every year that you just like didn't even think about. Like, oh, he's going to do this. He did that. It's like, he's conquered everything, and he really doesn't have much left to do, honestly. But then he'll do it.
He needs the championship, but from an offensive standpoint, he's basically touched all the bases.
Yeah, in terms of personal accolades, he's done everything. But he'll get it done eventually. But he's unbelievable, and he never ceases to amaze me, for sure.
And I mean, prior to last night's game, he had 20 points during an 8-game point streak. So, you know, if he does that again in the final 8 games of the season, we're talking about being right there. And that would make him the 3rd fastest player to ever hit 1,000 points behind only Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. So we're talking about one of the greatest players to ever play this game. I mean, if you want to just talk about pure talent, maybe the most advanced player that we've ever seen, just every skill he has is elite. And he's able to put together 2-, 3-, 4-point nights just consistently, game after game. You just look at some of the score sheets. It looks like you're reading a score sheet from a player who played in the 80s, but he's doing it in this era. And it just, he's such a dominant point producer. And it's not like it's just happens either. Like every night he seems to have either a highlight reel goal or set up an incredible backhand pass. These are special moments. We're watching, like we said, one of the best players to ever play the game in his prime.
Yeah, we're watching history for sure. Every time I'm at a game or whatever, I'll watch him and I'll tell my brother and my girlfriend or whoever's with me, I'll be like, we're watching history right here. This is Connor McDavid. He's one of the best players to ever play the game, if not the best. And I know we're on the 99 Forever podcast right now. Wayne Gretzky, I respect, and he is the GOAT. And but Connor McDavid, he's something special.
I think, like we said, it's very difficult to compare eras. Yeah. You know, some people say if you put McDavid back in the 80s, he would dominate unlike anyone else. I still say if you put Wayne Gretzky in today's game and you give him modern training, modern nutrition, modern equipment, he would be a scoring champion too. So it works both ways. I think if you were great in one era, you could be great in any era as long as you had all the technology available to you that the players playing today have.
Oh, I fully agree. I mean, Wayne Gretzky was eating like a hot dog and a Coke before
every 4 hot dogs and a Coke as his pregame meal.
Yeah, that's crazy to think. I mean, now the guys are so dialed in with
lift weights, smoke cigars on the golf course in the summer. Like, you know, it was a completely different time, right?
Yeah. And yeah, like you said, the technology and all that and the advancement of the skates and the gear, everything has advanced. And if you were to put him, I mean, yeah, everything you said, I fully agree.
Give him, like we said, all the advancements that McDavid's had since he was 10 years old growing up playing this game, modern sticks, you know, like I said, learning how to take care of yourself better, and just the talent and work ethic that he has, I'm convinced that he would still be the best player in the game if he was playing today. And, you know, I think back to late January, I was on vacation in Mexico when you were at that game in Nashville. And I remember coming back from the pool because I wanted to watch that game on my iPad in the hotel room. And at that time, like, Connor had 4 points in that game. And even after that, he was still 11 points back of Nikita Kucherov for the league lead in scoring. And last Saturday, McDavid briefly surpassed both him and Nathan MacKinnon in the scoring race before they leapfrogged McDavid again. But still, it's incredible to think how large of a gap he's made up over the past 2 months. And even though he's trailing them again, McDavid does have a couple games in hand, and I wouldn't bet against him winning his 6th Art Ross Trophy this year. Since American Thanksgiving, McDavid has 110 points in 56 games, which is nearly 2 points per game, or a 161-point pace over a full 82-game season. And if you look at the Oilers' remaining schedule, we talked about it a little while ago. They play the Coyotes twice, the Sharks, and the Flames in 4 of their final 8 games. He has a great opportunity to have big nights in all of those games. The Oilers also play the Avalanche twice, so that's 2 head-to-head games against MacKinnon. And if he outscores MacKinnon in those games, I think he probably wins the scoring title too.
Yeah, it's crazy to think. I mean, yeah, I remember I've just seen so much stuff on Twitter or X or about how far away he was from this, and there was like zero question, like, oh, there's no way he'll even come close. Like, it's just not a zero, you know.
Never bet against Connor McDavid. And you know, we knew he was playing hurt earlier in the year. Like, if it wasn't for the Heritage Classic, I don't think that he would have come back as soon as he did. He only missed 2 games with that oblique injury, but he came back because he wanted to play in the big game, and we saw it for the next probably 2 to 3 weeks. He didn't look like himself. He wasn't making those amazing McDavid-like plays that we're used to seeing from him. He wasn't skating up the ice and dangling through guys like he's done for so many years. And everything just sort of clicked in late November. It seemed like he got healthy almost overnight. He had a 2-goal game in Florida, and I think he picked up an assist in Tampa the next game. And then after that, he had that 4-assist game in Washington. And from there on, he was just on this incredible run where, like I said, he's been putting up basically 2 points a game over the past 4-plus months now. So to come from being under a point per game, he was at 12 points in 13 games. earlier this year, which was the first time he'd been under a point per game since his rookie campaign. And to go from where he was, I think he was 114th overall in NHL scoring, to, like I said, briefly being at the top of the pack last Saturday. Only Connor McDavid could have made up that ground in that amount of time.
Oh, yeah. Only him, like you said. And I think he's 3 points away, I believe, from Kucherov.
Unfortunately, Kucherov and MacKinnon both had 3 points tonight.
Oh, of course it is.
So MacKinnon's up to 130 and Kucherov's at 133. Okay. So McDavid, it would be, as of right now, 7 points back of Kucherov again. However, he does still have 2 games in hand on him. And let's not forget, he was injured for 2 games earlier this year. So realistically, he's 4 games behind what those guys have had. So if you give McDavid those 4 games back at his point per game pace, like, he's ahead of Nathan MacKinnon in points per game and just 2 points, 0.02 behind Kucherov. So I think that it's a safe bet that he would probably be ahead of them if he had those games back. And unfortunately, like, injuries happen, and he only missed 2 games, so it's not a ton of time lost. But still, those 2 games are massive when the scoring race is as tight as it is right now. And he's going to have to make up that ground when they do play against the Avs, because it's not just always the weaker teams that he beats up on. Like, maybe he will put up a 5-point game against San Jose in a couple weeks, like we said. Like, he's had big games against, he had a 6-point night against the Red Wings, who are like a bubble playoff team. He had a 5-point game, he had 3 other 5-point games this year, Washington, Anaheim, and one other one that's escaping me right now. But still, the point is that he can have these big games against some of those teams, but he also brings it against the best teams too. I think he really sometimes saves his best performances for when the lights shine the brightest. And tomorrow night, going up against Nathan MacKinnon and the Avs, I know that he's going to come out flying and want to not take the scoring title back, because I don't think that is or has ever been his top priority, but he wants to, you know, lead the Oilers to a victory. And by doing that, he knows that the best way he can help this team is by producing offense.
Yeah. Something I've really noticed too, like when he's going against like the league's best, like you said, like,
yeah,
MacKinnon or
he elevates, you know, he just
defensive game too. Like, he's so much more into it too. I mean, he's already on it.
He's a competitor though. And yeah, you know, like, maybe winning the scoring title is not something that's that important to him, because he's already won 5 of them. He's a guy who's driven to win, not to put up points. But at the same time, when you're that ultra competitive, you don't want to let someone get ahead of you either. And I think that when he sees MacKinnon or Kucherov having a big night, that will just give him that added motivation to come back the next night and have a big game himself.
Yeah. And you look at his plus minus too. I believe he's a career high in plus minus. I think it's like a plus 32 or something like that.
It is. Yeah, I think his previous career high was 27.
Okay. Yeah. So he's really taken up his defensive game too, to another level this season. And that's really cool to see.
Oh, without a doubt. And actually I thought it was 27 back in 2016-17. His career high was in 2021-22, he was plus 28. So yeah, he still is there. Plus 146 for his career. So pretty solid numbers there. And we talked about the 100 assists, which is, you know, an insane number to think about. I actually did predict it back on my season preview show back in October, that he would get 100 assists this season. And I just felt that after getting 150 points last year, I thought he would do it again this season. And it would be another 60-goal season, but I thought his assists would climb up from 89, which was a career high from last year, to the century mark this season. And now it looks like he's going to maybe even push 110. He's 3 assists away as of right now. Could get it done tomorrow night. I think that it'll either happen tomorrow or against the Flames on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. Both would be very satisfying to me. I'd love to see him do it in front of the home crowd at Rogers Place. But if he ends up doing it at the Saddle Dome, setting another huge milestone in the Rivals building, I wouldn't be too upset about that either. When do you think we see McDavid hit 100 assists, Adam?
both sound like a win-win to me, but I'm going to guess it's gonna be in Calgary, honestly.
Maybe I'm pick up two tomorrow night and get the 100th in Calgary.
Yeah, I get an easy one against Calgary is my guess. In their home barn, I mean,
yeah,
it's tough to get much better than that.
Yeah, and lead the Oilers to another win. And, you know, they've worn the Heritage Classic jerseys for all three meetings this season. I was at one of them at Rogers Place back in, or I guess it would have been last month.
Yeah,
no, February. We were back there. So, okay. But I don't think that they are wearing them again on Saturday. Which, that means that they're done being worn now. And you know, it was a great jersey. A lot of people bought them. The hats sold really well too. Any of the Heritage Classic logos, really, that gear is flying off the shelf. So, would have been cool to see them wear those jerseys one more time. It'll be a collector's item for fans now because they're just going to have two jerseys, I think, next season after running with four the past two seasons. Like last year, they had the reverse retro and the alternate, and this year they had the alternate and the Heritage Classic. So it'll just be the regular home and away set next season when Fanatics takes over from Adidas, so we'll see how that goes. From the looks of the MLB jerseys, some of the early images I saw, I wasn't too excited about the switch going over, but maybe the hockey jerseys will turn out better.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I don't know. With those pictures that I'm looking at on Twitter, I'm seeing players sweating through their jerseys, and the numbers are like, they look like mm-hmm. skip-away jerseys, but we'll see what happens, I guess. They still have some time to make some nice ones, so...
Yeah, definitely. And I saw Tom Gazzola from Edmonton Sport Talk tweet earlier today that from what he heard, the design is staying exactly the same. And that was the big thing that I was worried about because I really like the look of these ones. I don't know if you remember when they first went back to the royal blue and orange jerseys, when you were in your early days as a fan, I like the collar on the new jerseys better than those ones. So that's one thing that I was concerned about. I wanted them to keep this look. I think that it's really sharp with the way that they've designed the collar of it specifically. That was the only major change. And there's also a three-dimensional element to the crest on the jersey now. So as long as those things are staying the same, I'm good with them.
Yeah, I agree. I saw those at the Oilers shop when I went in there. And the 3D look is an interesting look. But
it's cool.
Yeah, cool look.
I think all the teams are doing it. And that's another thing I should have asked. Did you buy a lot of Oilers merch while you were in Edmonton?
Yes, I did. I bought some stuff. The jerseys, I was surprised how expensive they were. They were like $320 Canadian.
Yeah, they can be, especially if they're an authentic crested jersey.
But I took home like a hat and stuff like that, you know, smaller stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah, the Canadian dollar rate works in...
Works in your favor. not so great for us going down there right now, but...
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, there was a time when the recession hit around 2008 when the Canadian dollar was almost even with the American dollar. And it was a good time to travel to the U.S. We took a family trip to California, actually... in the early 2010s, and around that time, it was not quite a dollar, but it was still pretty good compared to what it is now. So let's hope for us anyway, it gets a little better. But do you have a? I guess I should. We're talking on Oilers jerseys, so we'll just stick there for a second. But do you have a bit of a collection that's growing of Oilers gear?
Yeah, a good amount of stuff. I mean, I got a Ryan Smith jersey.
Of course, gotta have that.
Yeah, Ryan Nugent Hopkins jersey, and my next jersey I'm going to get is a Zach Hyman jersey.
Oh, I mean, hard to go wrong. The modern Ryan Smith, right?
Exactly, yeah. We got McDavid, or Gretzky passed the baton to McDavid and Mitty to Hyman, so we're so lucky with those guys. But yeah, I've got a good amount of Oilers stuff, and my favorite, I've got a memorabilia collection, and I've got seats from Rexall Place, actually.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and then I have a game used goal puck from Nugent Hopkins in 2014.
That's very cool. Yeah. I mean, anyone who could grab one of those seats from Rexall Place, you know, that's something that you'll have forever. Like it's a piece of history. That seat has seen a lot of NHL records and Stanley Cups. So Did you actually get a chance to drive by Northlands when you were in Edmonton?
I did. Yeah, that was really cool. Rexall was a huge part of my childhood, and to see it was awesome. I walked around and stuff, and it's kind of a shame to see what it's become a little bit. It's pretty sad to see its current state.
Yeah, it'll be demolished eventually, but
it's awesome to see, and just to be there and see the arena was so cool, and just to say I've seen it. Like I said, it was a huge part of my childhood, and that's my biggest regret, is not going to a game at Rexall Place. That's just
it's tough. I mean, like they haven't played there in, you know, almost 8 years now, but I went to my first game in 2006, and I attended games there for 10 years. So I've got a lot of good memories in that building. I'm glad I got to have those experiences, and they never played in I never had a chance to see a playoff game in that building, I should say, but just to be there and say that I was, you know, in that building and saw some pretty cool moments. Those are the memories I'll cherish. And I'm glad that McDavid got to play there for his rookie season, because that, you know, even Rexall Place is the arena that Gretzky built, and Rogers Place is the arena that McDavid built. But the fact that he crossed over and got to skate and play in the same building that Gretzky played for all his prime years, I don't know. I like that. I think that's cool that there's a bit of a crossover there.
Oh, yeah, I agree. It was awesome seeing McDavid. And just to further touch on Rexall Place, just the ice. I would watch games, you know, I'd watch the Ducks and Kings games at Rexall or whatever was on TV at the time. And
they were always known for having the best ice in the league.
Oh, seeing the ice, it was almost like blinding how like shiny and clear and crisp it looked. And it was just always looked perfection.
Oh, yeah, man. They I think because there's more events happening in Rogers Place now than there was at Rexall, maybe the ice isn't able to be kept in as pristine condition as it was back then. Like there's a lot more concerts and events coming through there with a new downtown arena, of course. But I think that Rogers Place probably still has one of the better ice surfaces in the league. And you'd want to have that ice at the best condition possible, because your team plays there more than anywhere else. And when you have someone like Connor McDavid, who's the fastest skater the game has ever seen, and a team with so much offensive skill, I think that's a good benefit to your team to have them playing on the top ice conditions possible.
Oh, yeah. Rogers, I think, I always see those the players like vote on arenas and stuff, and Rogers right up at the top of the list.
Yeah. I mean, it's a state-of-the-art facility, just everything top to bottom. And that, they deserve it. And that's a big recruiting process, too, for players. Like you talked earlier about Edmonton sometimes having a bad rep around the league. But, I mean, when you think about all the things there, first of all, the chance to play for a historic franchise that won 5 Stanley Cups and wear the same logo on your chest that Wayne Gretzky wore during his heyday, the chance to play with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, two of the best players in the world, the chance to play for a winning team and in, like we said, an excellent facility like Rogers Place, and play in front of fans who are so passionate and live and die with the team. I mean, these are a lot of big recruiting processes for players and potential free agents. And I think it's a big reason why the Oilers were able to land guys like Zach Hyman and Evander Kane as two recent examples in the past couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The facility. I mean, you and me have both been there now.
Yeah.
It's just such a great arena, world-class facility, the elevators and just the architecture. The design of the arena, the seats are comfortable. The Jumbotron is awesome. The displays, everything. I mean, I haven't been to too many NHL arenas.
Well, you've been to more than I have. Like I've been in Edmonton and Calgary and Winnipeg, but for you to have a chance to see, basically, it sounds like every NHL city up the West Coast. Yeah. I mean, you've seen quite a few spots.
Yeah. Yeah. But Seattle was the only one, I would say. Seattle and Vegas. Staples is cool, obviously, in LA, but Seattle's was very nice, and then Vegas is cool too. But Rogers Place is just on another level with a combination of the arena, the knowledge of the fans, the passionate fans. And then when they come on the road, it's just the amount of fans that come on the road and stuff. It's just, it's awesome for the players, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. And I mean, because the Oilers are the big show in town and a team that has been around for 45 years, has a very passionate fan base. I mean, hockey is everything in Canada, probably much like football is in the United States, or soccer in most of the world. Like it's a big deal here. Like it's basically religion in Canada. So, you know, and when you have a team like the Oilers, like we said, with so much history and tradition, the chance to go to a warm climate city in the winter is also very appealing for Oilers fans to, if they can escape to Vegas or Arizona or California to see a game. So, I'm not surprised that the Oilers have a good contingent of fans out to those games.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Always in Anaheim and LA, and then Arizona, especially, is just flooded with Oilers fans for sure.
Yeah. I've been outside of the Ducks Arena in Anaheim, but I've never watched a game there. That would be cool to check one out there, because usually the Oilers also win in Anaheim, so that's an added bonus.
Yeah, Honda Center's a pretty good arena. I think LA's much better, but Honda Center's cool. It's a good location. Disneyland's pretty close and all that. And Angel Stadium's it's like basically next door.
Basically, I've been to Angel Stadium. Angels are my second favorite team, so I do follow them, and I got to go to a game in there for the first time in 2018. So, yeah, pretty cool. Always good to go back to Anaheim.
Yeah, Anaheim's a good place, I think. Good food up there, too. I like making the drive. It's like an hour.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Oh, it's not bad at all, yeah.
Like I said, I got to get back to your neck of the woods one time. Had a good time in San Diego, and it's been too long since I've been there. So who knows, if I make a trip down there one of these years, Adam, I'll maybe give you a ring, and we'll get together and watch an Oilers game.
Yeah, hit me up. Let me know. There's the food here is underrated, I think. I don't even know if it's overrated or whatever it is, but it's the Mexican food.
I love Mexican food, so... You sold me on it already.
Yeah, the burritos are unbelievable. Mexican food is some of the... It's the best in the country, for sure. Yeah, it's the best.
Well, you're pretty close to the border right there.
Yeah, it's like we're 40-minute drive. I'm in North County.
Okay.
North County, San Diego, so about a 40-minute drive from Tijuana.
Okay, I've only been to the east side of Mexico, more in the Cancun area, but... yeah, definitely love to get down there in the winter and escape the cold for a couple weeks or a week if I'm lucky. And just like you said, even though I was down there, I was still able to catch all the Oilers games this year. So it's a great time for us to go in January and experience some of the weather that you guys usually partake in for most of the 12 months a year.
Yeah, we get that year round. So it's funny because people... here in San Diego, we'll like during the winter, we'll escape the warm weather.
You guys go skiing or something?
So it's funny how like people in Canada will do the opposite. Like they'll go escape the cold weather. Yeah. We'll escape the warm weather.
I hope you had a great time. Well, I know you said you had a great time in Edmonton. I hope you'll be back to see another game at Rogers Place in the future. And you got hopefully that gave you the itch to come back.
Oh yeah. My goal is to go to a playoff game this playoff run here.
So wow,
that's my main goal. I've been working hard and
saving up for that one.
I've been saving up for that one, yeah. And see how it goes. As long as it's not like insanely expensive, yeah. Put it on the credit card and just have fun. So that's my number one goal, is to go to a playoff game.
Well, I mean, I experienced my first one 2 years ago, and it was awesome. If you thought the atmosphere in the building was great for regular season, the playoffs are just another level. So, yeah, that'd be awesome if you're able to check one out this year or even in the next couple of years. But probably if you want one that's not going to break the bank, you might want to do it in the one of the first two rounds, because anything in the third or fourth round is going to be extremely pricey.
Yeah, I've been at two playoff games, both in LA.
Okay.
Yeah, they won one and then they lost one bad. I think they
Were they both in the 2022 run when they.
Yeah, they lost one like 5-0, I think.
Oh yeah, I remember that one. I think that was the only game in that series when McDavid didn't get a multi-point game. I think it was 4-0, I want to say. And then there was one when they beat them like 8-3 or 8-4, I want to say.
Yeah, I think I was at one of those games, but
I think that was game 3 and game 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think I went to both of those.
Okay. Well, I mean, you've still seen a couple Oilers playoff games, so that's very cool.
Yeah, the atmosphere was cool, but I mean, it was like a regular season Oilers game, like in Edmonton. Yeah. Like nothing special.
You want to be there in the home team's building and experience the full thing. And just to wrap up tonight, Adam, do you have a prediction for how far the Oilers go this season?
Oh, that's so tough because I don't want to jinx anything, but I'm just going to leave it at this. I'm going to say that they're going to go far. I'm not sure how far.
Okay.
I think they're going to go far and
further than last year then.
Oh yes. Yeah. I think they're going to go farther than last year. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Adam, if anyone isn't following you, listen to this podcast already, and I'm sure a lot of the people are, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter or X at Oilers Adam. I'm on there pretty frequently. And then that's pretty much my main social media account where I talk about the Oilers and I'll post whatever.
Post a lot of entertaining stuff. You're one of my favorite follows. So, glad to interact with you, man. And I appreciate you being on the podcast tonight. Hopefully you'll come back on in the future.
Oh yeah. This was a great time, Eric. I really appreciate you, giving me the chance to talk with you. It's been a great time. I love the podcast and I love all the pictures that you post and, you're a great follow as well. And, thank you so much for, the opportunity and hope, to talk with you soon.
Appreciate that, man. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric.
Okay. So for Adam Blaback, I'm Eric Friesen. This has been the 99 Forever podcast. We're out.